Oh, you the voice?
Nah, not me.
So if you're not the voice, who is?
The people, man. The people's the voice.
So what does that make you?
That makes me the middleman. I'm the middleman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Middleman Podcast. I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez, and today I'm joined by 570 filmmaker Nicholas Grenza.
How's it going, everybody? Glad to be here.
Welcome to the show, my friend. Welcome to the show. I think while we were talking over the phone earlier, this is your first podcast?
Not my first. Actually, first. It's actually my second.
Okay.
Still, like, big deal for me. You know what I mean?
Pretty new in the game, yeah.
My second one that I've been on, I should say. It wasn't, like, a part of, you know?
Okay, so. What was the first one that you were...
So, I started maybe, like, I don't know, back when I was 18, 19, fresh out of high school. I had produced a podcast for my buddy Verastro. He had like a sports podcast. That was in like my parents' basement type scenario. And then, you know, I got my own place, had a little studio set up in there. So I sort of got more involved being able to have more mics and stuff like that. So that was a Triple Threat podcast turned into New Faces podcast.
Whoa, hold up. I am so sorry, bro.
No, you're good.
Did we meet before?
The
New Faces podcast. That's why. Hold on. That's why I'm like fucking blown away right now.
Okay.
Okay. With Jaleel.
Jaleel. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Were you in Sanctuary Studio?
No. Okay. Okay. So over COVID, was that around like COVID? Like when it was?
Yeah.
Okay. So I produced it until around like the COVID times. And then I got a little sketch about like having people over the house because they'd have guests on. We'd have guests on, like, you know, quite a bit. And I say we. I was part of the podcast. I sort of did like the audio side of it, but I didn't have much insight. Like, I didn't talk too much. A lot of it is like basketball and NBA, and it's not my. I don't have the most knowledge in that. But yeah. So around that time, around COVID, they went to like a studio, and then now Verastro lives in Philly with now it's Brandon Verastro and Isaiah Cumberbatch. So, yeah, they do it, and they have this girl Paige doing the, you know, the audio side of it. But
that's shocking. That's small I'm world. Sorry. Yeah, I was like, what? That's crazy, because I met those gentlemen, and they were hilarious. I was like, oh, these guys are funny as shit. We were talking about doing a collab, and I was like, oh, did I ever meet Nick before? But I guess not. But,
just
you
missed
know, you. What brought you to the Middleman podcast, what kind of made this podcast possible was my lovely cameraman here, Michael. He actually recommended that, you know, I follow your page and I check you out. And, you know, I just wanted to know the story behind that because I don't even know the story. So kudos to Mike. Thanks for, making this podcast happen. Even just bringing this page to me because your page is legit, bro. You have a lot of great work, a lot of great quality that we're definitely going to highlight later.
I appreciate that. Yeah. So I was out filming in Scranton, that like brick road by like Coney Island or whatever. They had the like rainbow umbrellas. They had like a display. So I was just shooting some clips and Michael walked by with, I think he was walking his dog or something. And he asked me like, hey, what kind of camera you got? I'm trying to get into it or, you know, and, we just had a short exchange and, I snagged a clip of Michael as he was walking away. but fast forward a couple of days later and I walk like into Chipotle and it's Michael. And he's like, hey man, were you filming Scranton the other day? I was like, yeah, I was. And I'm like, dude, you asked me of the camera. And then, you know, I don't know if it was that time or like maybe the time after or whatever you mentioned about the podcast and everything. And I think at that point I'd followed you guys, or I just found out about you guys like a couple of days prior. Or that could have honestly even been what, you know, brought me into, you know, the
just
picture
into the vision,
guys.
Just yeah, into the vision,
into the vision. But yeah. And then, I mean, I go to Chipotle like, like 2-3 times a week. So, yeah, I see Michael like all the time. Yeah. You got anything to add, Michael?
Yeah, it was funny because I was like, I remember telling Charles, like, oh, I saw this guy with a really nice camera and shit like that. And then the next day, it was like 2 days later, I saw you at Chipotle. And I was like, no way, I have to ask him. I was like, he looks professional. We got to get him on the podcast.
That's funny as shit, man. Yeah. I love that, man. That's such a great story. And I'm happy that happened. That's such a genuine exchange. You know, Chipotle brings people together.
Yeah. And I honestly don't think we ever ran into each other like before then. Maybe we did, but I don't remember like running into, like at Chipotle, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was weird.
That's funny. Yeah,
it was cool.
It's funny.
Well, first, so full circle, we are here today. You are here today to just talk about what you are as a person, what you do. Like I said, he's a fantastic photographer, videographer, filmmaker. You got so many things that are going on, man. You know, you mentioned you were just in a podcast world not too long ago. So, you know, where did it all start? I think you mentioned you picked up a camera at a very young age. Is that where it started?
Yeah. So, so my dad, this is going way back. My dad is a playwright and he wrote a couple of plays when I was like just being born, or around that time. And then when I was about like four or five, he had them put on at, I forget what the place is in Wilkes-Barre. He had one of his plays put on for like, you know, maybe a month or so there. So I remember like as a kid being on someone's shoulders and watching, like hearing clapping and everything, and my dad coming out on stage and, you know, whatever that was, if that's a real memory or like something that I just created in my head. So I think the creative side of it, I know that's not exactly the question, but we'll get there. I think that's where that comes from. So, my dad always being like into movies and stuff, you know, we'd watch a movie and he'd be like, oh, how did they shoot that? And mm-hmm. this and that. He always had like one of those bigger cameras, the over the shoulder ones. So I said I wanted to get like a smaller camera because he wouldn't let me take the big, you put VHS tapes in it and record on VHS tapes.
Yeah.
So like for Christmas, they got me, you know, a little Sony, camcorder and, yeah, I took that thing everywhere and started making YouTube videos, like really, thankfully I was able to get into the account and like delete some of the videos because they're really cringe. But, yeah, just picked it up that way, did it for fun, got into skateboarding in my teen years and then, you know, fell away from the, you know, the video side of things. Cause I would do like edits when we were skateboarding and stuff like that, but got away from the video stuff when I got into like making music and stuff in, around high school.
So, excuse me, let me ask, you personally made music or you were, like just producing for other people?
So I made, let's go back to like the YouTube videos for one second.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cause it ties in. My friend Jonathan Mangoni, he used to make YouTube videos as well. And I don't know if his are still up. So my bad, Jonathan, if this gets around, you know, but, we were young, but we both had channels and we were trying to promote each other's channels on our own respective ones. So he was like, I'll make a video telling people to go subscribe to your channel. You make a video telling people to go subscribe to my channel. So, as a kid, I was very like, I'd download like animation, like it was called Pivot, where you can make like animations and stuff like that. And I tried everything on the computer. And, so I got into FL Studio when I was like really young, just messing around. So I was like, I'll make a song, like a beat, put it in a video telling people to go subscribe to Jonathan's channel. And that was like the first beat I ever made. It wasn't anything serious. I'd like dabble in it. And I thought it was cool making some music. And then when I was in like high school, I started becoming friends with, you know, people who were, you know, trying to be rappers and stuff like that and grinding. So, you know, I was like, oh, well, I know how to make beats. Like, let me try to do this. And I mean, like Lil Wayne and every, but it was like really popular then, like Young Money, Cash Money, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I just really enjoyed like hip hop music and it just, I wanted to make beats. And so I made beats for like people who, you know, people who rap and stuff like that. And then I also got into the audio side of it, like recording and mixing and mastering. But yeah, that's pretty much like how I got into it and what I did. Cause yeah, I dabble in a lot of things, you know what I'm saying?
But, yeah, no, you definitely have a creative background and it all started and stimulated from that play, you know, and I think that's pretty significant. And, I'm hoping that story is true, you know, that it, yeah. you didn't, you know, it didn't just come out of nowhere because, that's really cool for you to recognize a moment like that and be able to be like, yeah, no, that's where my creative side stems from, mm-hmm. you know, because, people probably ask me often like, all right, if you were to ask me where the pivot point for me to, you know, start a podcast was, it would be that a friend influenced me to just do it. You know, he said, you should start it up, right? But it's not like I ever had a sense of self-affirmation with that, like, creative mm-hmm. mindset. But, I don't know, words and conversation is creative, and I started to, like, embrace it over time. But I never really had that. I don't know where it stemmed from. I really don't. You know, I think it's just personality. But for you to be able to recognize that that's where your creative creativity stemmed from, you know, from back then. That's pretty incredible, man. That's great.
For sure. Maybe you're doing it just because you're meant to be doing it, you know?
You didn't
need like a core memory that was like a turning point. It's just, it's almost cooler that it just happened and now you're just doing it just because you want to do it. You know what I mean?
I fell into it is what yeah. I told. And that's really the truth. It was like, I fell into it, you know, and I know that I'm happy when I'm doing it. And it's real genuine. And, you know, we love the response and the engagement that we get from everyone, you know. You have done a numerous amount of YouTube videos that I stumbled upon today, man. And, you know, like filmmaking, you mentioned watching movies with your father, you know, and picking out points that like, oh, yeah, that's such a great shot. Where did they get that from? One of the movies that I think about with great shots is that one right there, 1917. Okay, like that's one of those movies that it's like, damn, like, how did they direct that? How did they shoot that?
Yeah.
And is that something that maybe is like an end goal for you to?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's like everyone who does camera work, it's like the end goal is to, you know, make movies, have a feature film. But that's definitely where I want to head. I don't know how it's going to end up there because what I do now doesn't necessarily set me up for that. But I just,
what would you consider that you do now?
I do like wedding videography, wedding films, which that's probably the closest thing to it without actually doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like music videos as well. A lot of my work is like event work, going to events around the area, doing photos and videos for that, or on the photo side, you know, just like engagement photos, or, you know, just basically like anything in between, I'll shoot, you know what I mean?
But yeah.
Around here, there's not much opportunity where it's like, you know, hey, we're shooting a short film. You want to step in and help or something like that? So, yeah, I mean, my dad actually, he's written like another play. He had written two plays and the second one didn't get, you know, put on anywhere, but he wanted to turn that one into a movie. So it's like, that's something that I have, with him. That's like, that would be awesome to take something that he wrote. And he's like, you, I know you see, like, you have a creative eye. It'd be cool if you could do it. And, so yeah, that's like, that's a very possible, I don't even want to say end goal, cause it's not the end, you know, that's where it would like really stuff would be like, wow, this is actually happening right now.
Yeah. Where you'll reflect back and be like, damn, like this is something that I set a goal for myself a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And going through the steps and everything that you've gone to get to the point from the first photo that you've taken to where you're at now, the improvements, post-production, editing, the equipment, you know, just looking for what you're looking for has developed, you know, and you're going through it and you probably like, so how many times do you sit there and reflect back to like the photos that you may have taken maybe a year ago? And then, you know, all right. I saw this one post that you said it was hilarious. It was like, pulls up to a place, takes about like 50 photos. And it's about like 7, only post 2.
Yeah. that's a story of all like photographers' lives, man. It's just shoot, and then like see it. And I mean, your biggest critic is yourself, really. Not to be corny, but like it really is. I mean, it's not just photography. It's like everything, you know, mm-hmm. Like you go out on vacation, you take a bunch of photos and then you come back and you're like, I don't like how I look in this one. As you know, we all have insecurities and I get in my head when it comes to, you know, what I think is like a cool picture to post. What's pointless. What's like, that doesn't catch the eye. And what I try to do is run them by some of my friends before I even post them and, just, you know, send a couple their way and be like, hey, which one would you post? And, one of my good buddies, like I go to most of the time, he's like, I like this one. And I'm like, oh, that I was like, not going to post that, but now maybe I'll throw it in there. And, you know, sometimes on my story, I'll do little polls, which one's your favorite, blah, blah, blah. And it surprises me, you know, like, cause what in my mind is, you know, what I'm looking for or what I think I see in photos and stuff like that. It's like other people see other stuff. That's what's like amazing about photos, you know, but yeah, it's definitely a battle, like constantly with.
No, I get that because it's like, you're going to sit there and you're going to look at your work and you're going to maybe think that that's your best shot. And someone else is going to be like, maybe that's your worst shot.
Yep.
I get that too. You know, I have a lot of self-criticism on myself. Like, damn, was that podcast even good?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, I'll just ponder it and ponder it and ponder it. And then I'll dread listening to the audio file because I'm like, damn, like is it going to be good?
Yeah.
You know, and we'll listen to it and I'll be like, I'll sit there and I'll just laugh. And I'll be like, damn, that was actually pretty good. You know, but also I look amongst my peers and I ask them like, yo, what do you think about this moment? What do you think about that moment? And my peers criticize me, you know, one of my biggest flaws is the 100 take. So like, I'll like an agreement. Like if I'm agreeing with you, just be like 100.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck does that even mean? Right. What does even 100 just mean? Like, I'm like, I'm sorry. Life is just an emoji for me now. It's just 100.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you're like,
yeah. Preach, bro, preach. Yeah. You know, it's all about that, man. So definitely being a director, you know, filmmaker. I see it in, you know, your videos. You have a fantastic YouTube. Would you mind shouting out your YouTube right now?
Oh yeah, it's just Nicholas Grunza Media. That's also like my Facebook, and I don't believe that's my Instagram. My Instagram has a different name, but yeah, I won't shout that.
We'll tag that in. That's no problem. But yeah, you have a bunch of videos on YouTube, and you know, some of them date back to even like 2 years ago. Even an unboxing of a drone that you currently use. But I was watching a lot of those videos, and I think first and foremost, you're fantastic at vlogging. You know, you're really good at telling a story and narrating it. And I don't know if that's like coming to you natural. I don't know if that's first take or not. But dude, you're really good at it, man. And I would like to see you do it a lot more because, you know, even if you're not trying to create a vlog, you don't even label it as a vlog. You've labeled it as a visit to a place.
Oh yeah.
You know, like let's talk about Pagadoa?
Pagoda.
Pagoda. Fuck.
Hey, you got it sort of right.
Sorry, J-O. We had an artist. His name's J-O. He lives out there, and I butchered it.
Yeah.
Once again.
didn't learn, huh?
Didn't learn, but. That building, if you haven't seen that building, you want to describe that building for the viewers?
Yeah, and hopefully I get all the facts right now, but it's like a Japanese style pagoda, which is it's like the iconic, like literally like Japanese architecture, or I guess there's also like, you know, Chinese pagodas, I believe. I don't know, I'm not, you know, 100%, but
do your own research.
Yeah, do your own research. Take everything with a grain of salt. But I researched it for a little bit. It was built in like the early 1900s, and it was supposed to be a part of a resort, and there was supposed to be like a bunch of different buildings up in up on like this mountaintop in Reading, Pennsylvania, and that was going to be I believe a restaurant, and like I said, there was going to be a bunch of other buildings, but they couldn't get the funding for it. So they had to I don't know if they handed it over to the city prior to World War II or after. But during World War II, we were, you know, not on the Japanese side, clearly.
Oh.
So they didn't want to continue building this because there's actually a bell at the top of it that comes from Japan. And it came from one of their pagodas. And yeah, the city apparently, what's, you know, documented is that the city thought that was almost like treason. You know what I mean? Like that would be, we can't have this like Japanese building. We're supporting the culture when
we're currently at war. Yeah.
Yeah. We just did unholy things. So like, yeah. So it basically got shut down. Now the city owns it and there's just no funding for it. They're on their website. They're trying to get funding for it to get it up and running. But being up on the mountain, it takes like a drive away from the city to get up there. And there's not a lot of crime, but there's a lot of like delinquent activities that go up there. There's signs that say like no excessive noise, and you have people like, you know, doors open on their car just blasting the radio all the way to go out and smoke a blunt on the side. And it's like, it's such a beautiful place, but there's graffiti all over the place now. Like it really is a shame. And like I feel like I'm one of those like old guys that's like, we have to preserve this. But it's true, it's like there's so many cool things in Pennsylvania that people growing up, I was always like, PA is so boring. Like there's nothing in PA. And now I'm just like, dude, there is so much in PA. Like PA has a really rich history. And even like, you know, areas of New York that are close by, New Jersey, like there's a lot of things around here that if you just like look into it, you'll see that like it actually was a big part of the US like now, you know what I mean? Not that in specific, but you get the point.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was one of the first 13 colonies, correct? So there's a lot of history. And, you know, it's ironic that you say that because a constant theme in a podcast has been like, I've been having this conversation with a lot of people, like preserving historic PA. And, you know, I like to ask people like, how much do we preserve and how much do we move forward? You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's definitely one of those buildings that I've never been. Okay. I've said I wanted to go. I've even contemplated this after seeing your video. I'm like, damn, maybe I want to go tomorrow because I don't want to do, I have nothing to do tomorrow. Maybe I'll take a drive, you know? And it's just like, it's amazing to see that building. It's such a beautiful building. The vlog experience that you gave for the people, you know, to drive down there, chatting it up, describing the loud music.
Oh, yeah.
And you can actually hear it in the background as he's speaking.
Yeah.
And then, you know, going up with the drone, which that drone is absolutely amazing, you know. But one thing I wanted to talk about before we move on to, you know, the drone or even anything else,
for sure,
was something that you mentioned that I thought personally while watching your video, right? Pennsylvania is so boring, right? I was like, I was one of those kids too. Like, damn, Pennsylvania is so boring. If you ask me to go on a hike to the Delaware Water Gap, I will spit in your face and like give you the ugliest, like, oh, like, no. No, I don't want to go, okay, because I've done it so many times that it's like, oh, great, we're up here. Wow, that's nice. Let's go the fuck back down. Okay, great, fantastic. We just climbed that mountain for nothing. But with that being said, I was watching your video of the Delaware Water Gap, okay, and I was watching videos, and it's like aerial pannings of his, you know, work that you'll see, and I realized, like, damn, like, it is so beautiful, and I want to say thank you for that because it really made me feel like, and it's crazy that you said that because I was really thinking like, damn, it's so beautiful. And here I am thinking that what I just said, Delaware Water Gap, don't ask me to go there. I'll say, fuck no. I don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Putting it through the lens of, you know, your aerial work and what really, and what the true beauty of the nature really is captured in your work. And it made me realize like, damn, bro, Pennsylvania really is a really, really beautiful state within the fall, winter, spring, summer, whatever. Like, you know, we got all these trees, the leaves, you know, there's a lot of aesthetically pleasing things. You know, you've done aesthetically ASMR videos of downtown Scranton.
Yeah, it's random stuff.
Yeah, and it's like, it's just a corner store that sells a newspaper, but it's like, damn, I live there. I know that market. I know what that is. And it's like, I'm just going through it. And it's kind of like I'm nose blind, but I'm vision blind to what I'm going through and living through.
Yeah.
But you bring it to life, man. You bring it to perspective. And I want to give you that comment. So
I really appreciate that because I'm really hard on myself with especially vlogging. I think I'm like such a bad vlogger. But you saying that, man, like, I mean, I look at other people vlogging and I'm like, man, like, how do I make this a story? I really focus on everything like way too much. So It seriously means a lot to hear that, man. I, especially about like PA, you know, that seeing things made you feel certain things with my videos. And that's one thing that Giraldi said from what's it called? The Trudy Show. Trudy Show, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm on my toes right now. But yeah, she said like your videos make me feel something, and I was like, huh. Like that makes me feel really good that people could watch the videos and be like, oh, I didn't notice how beautiful this is. Or like, I didn't, you know, they made me want to like cry or they made me want to do this. It's like, that's the goal. You know what I mean? To make like, that's literally what the difference between like cinematography and just regular videos are is like a video might be like, I don't want to sit down and be like, hey, this is how you do something. I want to sit down and show you something. And you'd be like, oh, that's what that feels like. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't what's happening. Like, you're going to feel what's happening. You know what I mean?
How do you feel like you create that feeling experience? Like, how do you bring it to the person? What do you try to capture?
I'm definitely not like all the way there yet. You know what I mean? And I don't know if I'll ever be there, but like, you know, it's the same with the breakdown of like how films are shot. What colors, like what colors people are wearing. I can't say I go that deep into it. Sometimes it just works out in like, you know, a really good way. And it comes down to the editing more so. But, like you say something like Breaking Bad, a lot of people say Breaking Bad's like one of the best shows ever. And I think the reason for that is because like the slow moments are slow moments. If there's a moment where you're like, I don't want to be here. Vince Gilligan, the writer, like, and he directed some of it too. You know, they drag those scenes out and you might be like, this is boring. But if you're really invested in the show, you're like, he's making you sit through the slow moments so that the high peak moments, it's a payoff, you know, mm-hmm. like that's what it's for. Or, you know,
So building a suspense in a sense.
Yeah. Or, like say in certain instances where it's like a character is, a character is about to do something that they've been trying to get over. And they've been pushing themselves to get over something. You might show them as they're like, have a lot of anxiety and fear about something. The camera's looking down on them because it's making them look smaller. You're looking down on that person. And then they get over something, like whether it's, public speaking or like something crazy, like where, it took some courage to get over it. Then you show the angle looking up at them, and it just signals to the person who's watching it, their brain to go, oh yeah, like this person's powerful now. We're looking up to them. Like they do it in movies where there's like a tall person, like a big, antagonist and a protagonist. Like when the antagonist is made to feel bigger, you're looking up and you're looking down at the protagonist. So yeah, there's a science behind the film, and that's got my complete devotion right now.
That's how you tell a story without, I know Michael, you had a question, so we'll get back to you. Hold on to your thought. but no, as you're saying, that's how you tell a story in motion, in my opinion. Okay. That's how you tell a story with just motion. Excuse me. Let me rephrase that. Tell a story with just motion. I was watching Dunkirk yesterday.
Okay.
Okay. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I actually added it to my, I don't know if it's on Hulu or HBO Max.
HBO.
my trial just ended yesterday. It was on my list and I was like, crap, I didn't get to watch it.
Yeah, no, it's my first time watching. I've seen all Christopher Nolan movies, I think, now to date. I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan.
Okay.
But with that movie Dunkirk, I realized that, there really isn't that much dialogue and context in it. Like, there's not that much talking. Most of the movie is, it's a cinematography film, bro. That's all it is. Like, I was like, damn, bro, like, there's probably put together, not joking, less than maybe 1,000 words. I might be wilding. But dude, I just felt like, it was chatter. That's what it was. It wasn't real lines. It was chatter. Every now and then you'll get a real line, an actual story from something. But for the most part, the movie told itself just through the film. And that's really the brunt of it, man. So trying to just capture that, will be, an amazing skill. And you are capturing it. You said you're not there all the way. Obviously, there's things we can all improve in our game, but you're doing it. You're doing it. So, Michael, back to you, my friend. We saw you pick up the microphone for a minute.
It was it's pretty far gone now, but it was about vlogging.
Yeah. No, I was trying to bring it back too. Yeah,
okay. I do like vlogging too. I always want to vlog like fun things, me camping and stuff, but not just like shots of me camping, just like the things that happen,
The story.
The story, right? But sometimes I'm like, I don't want to hold the camera right now. I want to like have fun. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I don't
need
the guide. Like, I want to point the camera at everyone's face, but like, I also want to like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do some other thing, like being the fun moment. You know what I mean? That's like my problem with vlogging.
Yeah.
Always happens. And then when I go back to the footage sometimes, I'm like, this is just not that good.
Not worth it. You're
shake. I'm looking at the floor too long or something.
Yeah.
That was just my thing about vlogging.
Yeah. I just recently had a trip out to California, and I went through this little like Chinese, or like Chinatown, like a little market. And I mean, my camera's big. I don't have a GoPro. So my camera's like, I had this big lens on it, and I'm walking through and I'm like, I'm gonna do a little vlog. You know what I mean? That's what I watch on YouTube is, like smaller, or like little market, like walkthrough vlogs and stuff like that. People trying street food. And, I was just like, I'm just going to hold the camera down by my waist and point it and just, try to capture it. Got home, all the footage is unusable. It's so unusable. I'm like, yeah, this is okay. You need like a GoPro would be like much easier to just hold and not pay attention to because it's so wide. I didn't have like a super wide lens on my camera. So it was just like, it's not great.
Vlogs are hard to do. And I understand what Michael's talking about as far as trying to be in a moment. I feel like I've been doing it lately. It's just like I've been trying to stay off my phone when I'm at big events. Okay. So like concerts, like I've gone to concerts and I might have like one video now.
Yep.
As compared to when I was like I was 18 and I went to my Logic and G-Eazy concert, my first concert ever. And bro, I could probably tell you the whole concert from start to finish who was there because I recorded it and I have it, now it's just like, memory, be in a moment, live in a moment. I love to do that. But I understand that the added pressure, especially as the vlogger, to have to record yourself, record the subject, what's going on, and tell the story, direct the story. When you were doing your vlogs, do you kind of just plan them, or do you just kind of like just free float and whatever sticks, sticks?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
A little bit of both.
Yeah. Right?
I mean,
I think you have to.
When I do try to plan it, that's when I do like 20 takes and I'm like, I can't get the wording right, or I keep stumbling or something like that, you know? But when it's just like off the top, obviously it's way more natural. Like if you have a script to say something, you're going to mess it up. But if you just go off the top, it's a lot better. But that's a big thing with the vlogs is with the story of it. It's, you know, how can I make this so that someone doesn't watch the first minute and then leave? Like what's the story? Where's the start, the middle, and the end? So that's what I try to focus on. So try to make it a little interesting.
Yeah, engaging as well. Okay, so those are your vlogs. Love the vlogs. Love to see them. Even if you aren't labeling them as vlogs, sometimes you are recording and telling the story of what you are, you know, capturing and so on and so forth. So you're doing a great job at that, man. Keep at it.
Thank you.
Love it. Back to filmmaking. You know, filmmaking. Director, I was looking at your YouTube page, and you got some pretty intriguing, you know, shots, you know, and one of my favorite ones, and I was there in 2023, not in 2022, the Ubaldi Saint race, okay, and it was a trailer for, like, a documentary,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yep.
So, that trailer was badass. Are you putting together a documentary about that whole event there?
I may be.
Okay.
It's Ubaldo.
Oh, Ubaldo. Sorry, not Ubaldo.
I have to say that because, you know, my Italian, everybody I met over the course of the last, like, year filming, they'll probably kill me if I don't correct you.
Mm-hmm.
Different languages, you know? So, but that story is one that's really, like, around here is so accepted and is so, like, normal. Is, oh, yeah, Ubaldo. I mean, if you're not even from Jessup and you're not, like, really in tune with the events, and, I mean, I guess if you're younger or around, like, 21, around that age, you know, a lot of people just go just to drink and stuff like that. But that story, the history of how it got started and everything, you know, the drinking isn't, I shouldn't have even mentioned it because it's not even remotely has anything to do with the event. You know what I mean? It's just people just try to lump the two together.
Mm-hmm.
I
think they do that with any holiday,
yeah,
bro.
Very true. But yeah, I mean, that story, If you say a story of, like I said in the trailer, a tradition that started in the 1100s and still is done to this day, that's basically, I don't want to disrespect it, but it's almost like a religion to people in Gubbio where it started. Saint Ubaldo is like, it means a lot to like families, ancestry, like the town. I mean, it's just like an insanely fascinating story about, you know, a leader of a town in Italy that stopped the town from getting overrun by an army and, you know, saved the town. And yeah, it's just an incredible story, man. And I don't even want to say too much because I'll talk for like 30 minutes.
Can I ask what the significance of the
race?
Yeah, of the race. What's okay. The significance about the race?
That's perfect. So how I said, the leader in Italy, Gubbio, he saved the city from an army going to attack. His name was Saint Ubaldo. It's a long name, okay? But Saint Ubaldo is what he was, actually Bishop Ubaldo. But so he went to basically another. He went to another town from Gubbio. He walked to another town or road, whatever, in the 1100s, and talked to Barbarossa, who was a conqueror who was trying to conquer all these cities in Italy, and he, you know, made him. I don't know how exactly, but stopped him from conquering Ubaldo or Gubbio. Sorry. And, you know, people of the town were starting to wonder, like, where's Ubaldo? He hasn't come back. It was a couple days. So they sent people to go see Ubaldo. And when Ubaldo like returned to Gubbio, they were like, he's like, nope, we're not being overrun by the army. So the people of there was a couple group of people like in the town that picked him up and carried him through the town saying, Viva Saint Ubaldo. Saint Ubaldo lives. Mm-hmm. Cause they thought mm-hmm. maybe he had passed. Maybe they thought the army was going to kill him.
Ah.
So to get, you know, get around word around the town, they, you know, hoist them up on their shoulders, ran him through town saying, Viva Saint Ubaldo. And that signified that the town's not going to be overrun. You know, they're safe. He saved us and he's alive because he was like their president in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
And, So that's the significance of carrying the statues of St. Ubaldo, St. Anthony, and St. Giorgio, which they aren't, they weren't involved in the beginning of the, of Gubbio. They came later for different reasons, but I won't get into that too much, but
yeah.
Insane story. Like, there's a story behind everything, man. Like, and the more you look, the more I looked into St. Ubaldo Day and Jessup, the more things I was like, I have to include that. I have to include that. It started out that it was going to be maybe a 7 or 8 minute long, you know, montage / vlog of Ubaldo, or documentary, a mini doc. And by the end of all this talking with all these beautiful people and learning stories and traditions that I didn't even pick up on, it's like, this is going to be a full length thing. Like, this has got to be at least 90 minutes. There's so many interesting developments in the story and the history. That's like, I wouldn't do it justice if it was just 10 minutes. You can't possibly, this, you know, there's too much information, and it's not boring stuff. Like, coming from a 26-year-old kid, it's not boring stuff at all. I'm not even Italian, but this stuff just like, yeah, it'll hook you. So
it's such a unique tradition. And you really did a great job at highlighting, what, excuse me, what the race is and what's going on there, you know, just because, you know, the aerial shots and just seeing the crowd of people. It's like, if you're from that town and if you just happen to walk into that town on that day and that's what you see, you're going to be taken back. You're going to be like, whoa, what did I just walk into? You just walked into, there it was. I knew something was coming. You just walked into a full-blown race of people carrying statues. And what I think is so unique about it, and I heard the narrator telling it during the documentary in the trailer, mm-hmm. was that it only happens in two places.
Yep.
And Jessup, Pennsylvania, happens to be one of those places.
Yep.
And it's just like, what? Like, yeah. How? Why?
The whole country should know about this.
Yeah, like
they should. Well, I don't care. It should be a Netflix thing. But it's not going to be, because it's going to be my thing, you know?
And which will, you know, kidding. Then you'll pitch it to Netflix, and then Netflix will take it, and then, you know, it'll be your shit on Netflix's shit.
Yeah.
So, nah, man, that's such a great documentary you got going on there, man. I'm looking forward to seeing the final product, because I, just within like a 2 minute snippet video, I'm like, damn, that shit looks freaking awesome. Mm. And like I said, I was there, and I didn't experience a race, but I experienced a fair. I got to experience, firefighters going through, you know, it was just a big community and a big festival feel, and it felt inviting. A lot of people are happy to be there. You know, bands are playing. It was such a great time. So if you haven't been, check it out. Jessup.
Let me just say real quick. That's actually the hose company that puts that on. Mm. It just so happens to be Memorial Day weekend. So that's their, like, you know, all the towns have like their like hose company, fair and stuff like that. So that is something different. The only reason I say that is because of like the beer tent.
Yeah.
And that leads to a lot of the drinking, and like, you know, it doesn't give a good reputation. But yeah, so it is separate, but definitely check them both out. Check them both out.
And hopefully we'll check out your documentary when it comes out. I don't want to ask you about an end date or anything like that, because it sounds like it just keeps growing and growing and growing.
Definitely.
So that's fantastic. You mentioned possibly doing another documentary. Would you happen to shed some light on that one?
Yeah. So does that, I'm working on a couple documentaries.
Okay.
And probably more than a couple, to be honest with you. But, I recently went out to California. I don't know if that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, that's cool. We could definitely talk about it. Hence San Fran.
Cool. Okay.
That's why I put that up there today. I was like, you know what? We'll just put San Fran up there, because we're just in California. Let's reminisce.
Yeah. I did get to see San Francisco, but hey, I see it now. I don't even need to go there now. I was like, next time I'll go, but I don't need to now. But so yeah, I went out to California recently to shoot a show for my buddy. His name is Jerome Paul. He's a rapper. Actually, first song he recorded was in my mom's basement. I was like one of the first official people I was recording vocals for. So full circle, he was performing at the Whiskey A Go-Go, which is on Sunset Boulevard. And the show was great. I wanted to capture, that's the first show that I was seeing him perform at live. So, you know, it meant a lot sentimentally for both of us. So I wanted to get the behind the scenes of, you know, him rehearsing and, you know, just coming from, like I said, recording in the basement to the show. And I mean, that's on a lot smaller scale than the Ubaldo one, but still sentimentally, like, that means a lot to me. And while I was out in Cali, got to cruise around and see different parts and, you know, see the beaches and Santa Monica Pier and all that iconic stuff. So I will say the drone laws are like way more strict out there. And not as clear as over here, but yeah, it was a great time. But that's the documentary. You know, it's about him performing and, you know, where he's come from, and, you know, he's had a long story as well.
So that's awesome. I think that's really, really cool. Full circle to just be able to be a part of that. The both of you guys have grown in your respective field, and I'm sure that's just awesome. I can't wait to see that. But what you were saying there was, I just had the thought. Bring it back. I do this all the time.
It's all good.
All the time.
I'm here with you, man.
Oh, the laws. Okay. Oh, yeah. So you said the flight laws were a lot more stricter over there drone laws. Mm-hmm. Now I wanted to ask you, do you have any like stories from when you were, you know, just set your drone up and then you just got a bad run-in? Was there any bad run-ins? Could you care to share any stories?
Okay. No.
No? Okay.
I could say yes. Okay. But I'll say no.
Okay.
So I will say this. In California, it's illegal to fly in any park, in any like of the parks there. I guess the terminology online is so like, you know, you one site will say one thing and then, you know, another site will say another thing. And then the official like government site will say all this terminology, and it's very hard to understand what they're talking. I was like, no, you can't fly in any parks at all unless it's these ones in these counties. And you're like, well, what county is this in? Like, what is it? It's in between. Well, what is it? You know what I mean? So it's not easy to understand. And I got clearance like on my app that I use to check for, you know, flight status and everything. I got clearance on that, but still, you know, I should know better. I should know the drone laws, and, you know, I never did anything that I shouldn't have, you know, I never did anything I should have, but, I could have. And if I did, like, someone might have yelled at me, you know,
gotcha.
And told me that they were going to take my drone, but like that was if that happened, you know,
huh.
But it didn't happen.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. Never happened.
No.
I love it. Okay. Damn. I had another question for you and now I'm drawing a blank again. Let's get it back around full circle. Oh, Mike got a question. Go ahead. What do you got, buddy?
Bro, how was California?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, I'm sure.
Beautiful. And I'll tell you what, man. Like, it was 95, like, almost every day. But 95 out there does not feel like 95 here. 95 here is like, I'm going to die. 95 out there is like, oh, this is warm. Like, it's hot. But, like, then a breeze comes and you're, like, you're chilling. Out here is, like, so humid and, like, I don't know, man. It feels like suffocating.
It just feels nice, right? Like, it just feels good, right?
Yeah.
Because every time I hear people go to California, they're just like, the weather is just so good.
Like, yeah, it never rains
perfect,
there.
Yeah, it's just perfect, you know?
Yeah. It was supposed to rain there like 2 days, didn't even come. Didn't even happen. I was like, oh, all right.
Do you have, I think it's because of like the sea. I think the sea water definitely helps keep that area cool, although it's 95, yeah. It's not 95. But, you know, so you visit all these places. You probably have a favorite, right? But my question for you is what is like maybe a place that you're like, I have to go there. I can't wait to go there. I'm maybe saving some money, some lifetime spending, you know, just saving it to go to this place. Do you have anything picked out?
Anywhere in the world?
Uh-huh.
Switzerland. Okay. It's a big challenge for me because I have lung issues. I've had lung surgeries. I've had like quite a few of them. So, you know, altitude, getting on the plane in the first place to go to California was the first time on a plane after I had a couple of my surgeries. Mm. So I was very
sketched. Recent.
Like 5 years now.
Wow.
But it's like I have a condition where rapid change in altitude can cause like, you know, some pretty serious issues in my lungs. So flying, skydiving, scuba diving. I can't scuba dive. I can't skydive. Flying on a plane is like, you should be okay. It's you have a higher risk than someone who doesn't have the condition I have. So Switzerland being such, you know, the altitude is, you know, there's really high mountains and, you know, the air is such, so different over there. Sometimes I think about, you know, like, cause I want to go on train rides and hike and stuff like that. That'd be a big issue. I wouldn't want to go to Switzerland just to not be able to do certain things like that. But Switzerland's definitely like my lifetime goal to get there. And
is
it's
it
just
the
so beautiful.
Beauty? Is it, did someone tell you about it? You know, like, yo, you got to go there. Like, why Switzerland? That's such a unique place to want to go.
it's just such a beautiful country. It's very expensive. I know it's I think it's the most expensive country to live at. So it's just everything just seems, from what I've seen, seems, you know, so unique. There's a train, I forget the exact name of the train, but there's an iconic scene in a movie, A Cure for Wellness. It's in a lot of like other movies as well, where it's a train that's it goes over a river. So there's a viaduct and it goes over this river and into like the side of a mountain. And that's just like an iconic picture spot where to get photos. And I just love to like fly my drone there. And the city just looks so nice. You know, a lot of people say like, you know, Italy or, you know, France or something like that. But nah, Switzerland, I like the mountains. I like nature. You know what I mean? I like that kind of stuff. And even like take a step back, I'd say even like British Columbia in Canada, like the Pacific Northwest, like, yeah, that's another spot that's like, that's on my list.
So anywhere with nature, in a sense, a lot of history is what you're trying to capture. And you do a fantastic job. You know, you mentioned trains, you mentioned, I've seen your Jim Thorpe films, you know, big train guy. You like trains?
I like trains. Trains are nice.
Okay.
I mean, some of them around here are a little, not as nice to look at as some other places, but no, trains are cool. The trains are always interesting to capture.
So I saw this one video, right? I saw this one video of someone flying a drone, and he risked the drone's life, and actually, I think he ended up melting the drone, it said, after, in order to capture the shot. And what it was he was flying over an active volcano.
Yeah. Like, I saw that as well.
You saw that as well?
Yeah.
Dude, that's so sick. I'm like, yo, would you ever be willing to say, you know what? If it's worth the shot, let's do it. Let's send it.
I don't know.
What type of drone do you have, by the way?
It's a DJI Air 2S. DJI is the company. It's an Air 2S. The one he was flying was like an FPV drone. So it's like he wears goggles and when he turns the drone, like it tilts, you know. Mine has a gimbal on it, so it stays flat naturally. But those FPV drones are like, those are like the real action packed shots you can get with those. So those, you know, you normally people will build like the drone and then slap a GoPro on it. So they build the propellers and everything. Oh. And they could be cheaper, but they could be also more expensive. But I mean, hey, I got insurance for my drone. So,
okay.
You know, if I wasn't breaking any laws or doing anything I shouldn't be doing, like I'd risk it a little bit. I'd risk it, you know.
How long have you had your drone?
This one I got about a year and a half ago. Before that, I had a Phantom 3, DJI Phantom 3, which was probably probably like this big.
Oh, wow. That's
huge. Pretty big. Yeah, and it didn't fold up or anything. Mine now folds up. It could fit in like my hand. Yeah, that one was like a tank, but it was really big and the quality wasn't great. So, and it was still, it held its value for some reason. I don't know why, but I was able to sell it and put a little chip into the one I have now, but it was worth it. You know, it was worth it.
I mean, it's bound to happen, especially as a pilot. So did you go to like an online course to get, 'cause you have to get a license for this, do you not?
Yeah, if the drone is over like 249 grams, or if you want to use it for commercial purposes.
I'm sorry, grams? What are we talking about?
What's like weight.
Okay, yeah, my weight. Fault, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Missed that one.
No. It's all the, you know, the different measurement types for, you know, I don't even know what the comparison is for, like, you know, pounds or whatnot. Yeah, basically, I had to train online, like study for probably like a month and a half. Honestly, it could have been done in a couple weeks, but there's a lot of knowledge. Just learn about like weather patterns, how to like break down, you know, visibility and stuff. It's a long process. Had to go to a test center and passed it on the first go around. Thank God. 'Cause if not,
really?
You still have to pay if you fail. So yeah, I was not failing. I was not going to go in there and fail.
Wow.
But yeah, have the remote pilot license. So. It's a little flex, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure.
A little flex.
Like, hey, do you have a license for that? Yeah, roping.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
I got this mediocre-ass freaking drone over there. I bought that for like $7 at... No, excuse me. I bought it for like $10 at Family Dollar. Excuse me. Salvation Army.
Okay.
Okay.
Bargain.
And yeah, dude, it works great. There is a camera. I don't know if it works though. But it's cool because it does these flips.
Oh, okay, it does flips.
Yeah, it does flips.
Okay.
So it does flips. But unlike yours, so I was watching you control yours, and it has a nice little hover feature, which is really, really great. Mine, to like kind of keep fucking with the left stick in order to keep it upright and doing its thing. But the best part is, bro, you won't believe it. The best part is I get 8 minutes of charge time, or excuse me, 8 hours of charge time for 7 minutes of flight time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Efficiency.
So, but I got two batteries. So if you think about that, that's 16 hours charge time and that's 14 hours of flight time. Okay. So I make the best 14 minutes of that flight time.
Hey, bro. 7 minutes. 7 minutes is a long time.
Remember, you wanted 7 minutes in heaven in the closet when you were younger, right? Come on now.
That's what I'm saying, lady. 7 minutes is a long time.
That's hilarious, man. That's hilarious. So that's my experience with the drone. I think it's fantastic. I love your work, man. You do a fantastic job at just bringing, we talked a lot about your videography. You want to just touch on your photography? You're still doing a lot of that as well.
Oh yeah, photography is more. I want to say it's more of a hobby, but. I take photos, like my camera stays with me like everywhere I go. So, you know, just doing engagement photos and eventually wedding photos and stuff. It's like I said, a little bit of everything, event work, stuff like that, landscape. I mean, obviously the drone photography is what catches everybody's eye.
Yeah.
But the camera photography as well. Just do a little bit of everything. I can't even say what I do because it's like just a little bit of everything.
You also have a website, a fantastic, it looks like, did you develop that yourself?
Yeah.
You're a man of many trades, bro. I saw a graphic designer.
Yeah, dabble.
Yeah, dabble. Okay, producing audio. I mean, dabble. You know, it's just, you got your foot in the door of so many creative spaces, and you're definitely a creative dude, man. You know how to capture things and just tell a story with just a vision and music. You know, music selection is so important, and I really recommend that everyone check out, you know, check out Nick. Check out his work. Maybe even book with him for any of your needs, you know, because, dude, you're fantastic. You're well on your way, and I appreciate you taking the time to come here and join me on the Middleman Podcast. And honestly, before we get off the air here, I usually give the people the floor to just say anything that they want to say, maybe any helpful messages or, you know, anything that you want to leave for the people. You know, the floor is yours, my friend.
First of all, thank you for having me on. This is a great experience. I guess just, you know, harping back on stuff we talked on earlier, if you're trying to be like an influencer or like a YouTuber or anything like that, just post. Don't just create, man. Just go out and create stuff and post it, and don't worry about, like, it's not gonna get a lot of likes. It's not gonna be aesthetic for your page. It's not great. Just post and ask people questions. Ask you have a question, just don't be afraid to ask someone a question. Someone you want to know about how someone does something, just ask. Can't hurt to ask. You'll. I've learned a lot from just putting myself in uncomfortable situations that I would have never put myself in like a year ago today. And it's the only way to like get past, you know, the wall of your comfort zone. So definitely do that.
And as he said, if you're a content creator, you just have to post it, you know. And I think Trudy and I talked about that as well. Just post it. Jared DeVille, I know I spoke with him about it. You know, like when people get like, you know, they ask, oh, should I drop an episode on Monday? Don't ask that. Just drop the episode. Exactly. Yep. Just drop it. And whoever wants to see it, they're going to see it. You know, people are watching. And as long as you create your own formula and be consistent with whatever you want to do, stop being so uncertain of yourself, because you're going to see the growth and the development. And it's funny as shit, because today I was looking at episode 50 with Michael and Nezo, and I was just looking through the page, and I was like, wow, man, like, this is episode 82, you know, like,
wow.
Or excuse me, 81, because the next one's the tea time episode, so this is episode 81, you know, and that's just with a short amount of time, and we're seeing it happen, and we're seeing it grow, and it's so much fun to just see. And I thought about, like, damn, I never had a thought about, do we post that podcast? Never had that thought, but it's like, damn, do we, like, it's, you just see the growth, you know, you just see the growth from episode one to where we're at now. And it's fantastic. And that's just because I decided, send it. It's never going to be perfect.
For sure.
Send it. Okay.
Yep.
And with that being said, we're going to transition into tea time, not brought to you by, but inspired by Arizona Iced Tea. I am the man in the middle, Kevin Martinez. It is a pleasure being here with you all again. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you all next week.